Okay, in this recording, I'm going to explain if you have not been eating wheat or grain or having high levels of fibre in your diet, we need to retrain your gut microbiome, a bit like training an athlete. Look, if you were going to run a marathon and you've been sitting around for, you know, years not doing any exercise, you would not run a marathon the next day. Neither will you eat lots and lots of fibre in one go. So have a listen to this. I will explain why you need to take it slowly and why if you're eating bread for the first time after a long break, it might be that you need to just take it a little easier and retrain your gut microbiome. So, look, we've got a few things that we're going to bake today. We've just gathered round. What I want you to see is two things. First of all, this bread, which is exactly the proven loaf. We made this yesterday and we milled the flour here. It's significantly changed. I don't know if you want to come and have a little look. Oh, come. The seeds are still on there. It's really buttered. One of the reasons I like using real butter, it tastes delicious, but it also has vitamin K in. That butter helps slow down the rate of assimilation of the carbohydrate. They're incredibly delicate right now, but you can see these purple polyphenols over the top. Now, I've pushed the fermentation on this to the point where it's come up and you can just see it starting to fall back. That's as hard as I can push it. And this is more than 18 hours now. This particular one is a bit longer. But 18 hours of that fermentation at around about, starting off at 27 and then pushing it is what is creating that bioavailability. Now, with some of the proven breads, what I will do is I'll put this in the fridge to acidify it more and to create more breakdown. Not all breads need that. Now, that makes it very sour. And if you smell these, they're very lactic and very floral still. But I can push this even harder. Now, the thing with that is it becomes more and more sour. And this is the point. Some people will go, hey, I love that. And other people don't. So sometimes we have to go a little slower to get people to start liking the bread because it's a massive adjustment in palate. So I don't know what you think to this, guys. What's your thoughts on this?
Oh, it looks amazing. So that's 18 hours yet.
What time did we mix it yesterday? It was about 4, 5 o'clock. We're now 11 o'clock in the morning, so I can't do the maths. 5 o'clock. 5 to 11, that's 7 plus 19 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, 19 hours. Yeah.
And if you were to put it in the fridge now, how long would you put it in the fridge if you were going to push it?
So when I'm working with people who have got autoimmune, Hashimoto's is a great example, and what I can often do is reduce the amount of grains in there, and I've started working more with some gluten-free grains. That's quite interesting. But also I can push these, and I have been known with some people when I've been worried about the state of their gut and I've been worried about the mucosa layer, I've been known to push these for 2 days in the fridge, so another 48 hours.
And when you say, push them.
Push that fermentation, so really kind of like when I'm pushing, what I'm actually pushing is I'm pushing the microbes. The yeast can really kind of slows down in the fridge, but what we're seeing happening in that cold fermentation is actually bringing forward the lactic acid bacterial work and that souring, and you're transforming the sugars into long chain sugars, polysaccharides. And that kind of is known to be nourishing to the gut, but it's actually breaking it down further. And that acidity is transformational. So some of the things that we see with breads like this is the acidity itself, a bit like adding vinegar does what in the sequenced eating, that slows down the rate of assimilation of carbohydrate as well. And that slows down, but that acidity, it's a digestion. It's literally digesting itself in here. And so that cold fermentation really smashes up the gluten. And the more smashed up it is, the less likely it is to cause issues. I don't know if you want to pass me that pearl necklace that's on there. I think what's really, really important, and this is part of understanding, and again, look, I got thrown out of science at school. I think this is why I was disruptive.
What a surprise.
So look, you know, I'm not a scientist, but when I study and I realise what was very clear to me is that proteins like gluten, you've got your gluten and gliadin get together and they form a protein. And these proteins are whole, like so. And the story is that when your immune system has been annoyed, right? So you've got a eczema in your gut wall, essentially, because you haven't had enough fibre. Your mucosa layer is damaged. That's that lovely buttery stuff that we were looking at. Your proteins can get through the gut wall. There are that essentially you get something which, you know, I know this is so for laymen, they're like, what on earth is this? There's something called zonulin. I don't want you to get worried about it, but it can sort of open up these tight junctions. Tight junctions is like your it's like breaking into someone's garden by pushing the hedge open and stepping in. You're like, if the hedge was thick enough, you wouldn't be able to break in. Does that make sense? It's like a gap in the hedge. So these terms are, so if you're a protein and you're whole and you're a tuna sandwich at lunchtime, and you've just nom-nommed on your tuna sandwich, you haven't got a thick barrier. So your protein, which is a whole protein like this, gets through onto the other side and it sets off a chain reaction with your immune system. There are these toll receptors and they go, and it's like an alarm going off on the Starship Enterprise, you know, whoop, whoop. You remember there was like an intruder alert that someone had arrived and everybody sort of runs to defend. That's exactly what your immune system does. And suddenly there's this attack or perceived attack from your tuna sandwich at lunchtime. And your body's having non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So here's where we have a double whammy. And this is why I love this. It just excites me so much. So the first thing is, this protein is being cut up by the enzymes. Choppity chop, 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 chop. And suddenly the protein that they're looking for, they're like guards with a semi-automatic machine gun going, we're looking for a pearl necklace. Somewhere around here is a protein. And that's what they're on the lookout for. Now, along comes the smashed up gluten, damaged. It's not a pearl necklace anymore because they're looking for a pattern. And even within those strings, those bioactive peptides, that it gets brought down to amino acids. These are like amino acids and bioactive peptides. And if you don't understand, don't worry. It's just broken the protein down. You can, and we don't ferment this hard because it will be very vinegary, but for most of it, we can smash up. Most Marco Gobetti's work showed. Now, often when I put these in for someone who has a very challenging gut, I will push my bread really, really hard because what I'm doing is I'm trying to push it to being as gluten-free as possible. It is possible to reduce it down to a level, but the more you do that, the more you sour it. Now, most people, just with that alone, can start to feel that they can digest the bread. Now, here's the magic of what's happening. All the fibre in here and all the diversity in here and all the bioavailability is being slapped onto your mucosa layer by your umpa-lumpas in your gut. They're like, short-chain fatty acids. We'll put the barrier back. And you're building a big, fat, juicy mucosa layer, which is like thickening your hedge up. So here's your tuna stuff. We don't want you to eat a fast fermented tuna sandwich at lunch. We want you to eat a bread that not shores up the barrier. So you've got twofold increase that's going on. You've got this amazing damage to the gluten whilst shoring up the barrier. And most people immediately will say, stop eating bread. You speak to nutritionists and dietitians, unless you've got celiac disease, there is a way that you can actually damage the gluten and lift up that huge level of fibre that your gut microbes need. And there is the game changer. And that's what we need to educate people for. We have to bring out this understanding that when you have got gut permeability, you have to get away from gluten. It's awful. It's damaging. I would just say, yes, stop eating bread, but don't. This bread is not available. So yes, the advice is stop eating, but of course it's stop eating bread. It's bloody awful. It's inflammatory. It's causing your body to go into alert. Yes, stop eating, but stop eating dreadful bread and start understanding this is how we evolved to eat bread, and this is why we evolved eating bread, and why we could eat bread in those days was we evolved. And you come away to the stuff that we call bread now, I don't think even deserves to be called bread. That's the truth. So they're half right.
But when you're fermenting as long as this, so you were planning to do a 24, 48 hour ferment.
Yeah.
Do you push it to this stage?
No, I usually put it in the fridge about, so usually about 7 or 8 o'clock this morning. I'd have toddled down in my pyjamas, a bit like Nigella. and pop them in the fridge a little earlier.
You had 12 hours out.
Yeah, I mean, I can sometimes do 6 or 7 hours out. It depends. I tend to look at the tin and then let it carry on fermenting. So a little bit less time on ambient, a bit more time, probably 6 or 8 on the side, and then in the fridge. So if you're making it at home, I'd encourage you to make it maybe around about 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning and then pop it in the fridge, you know, around about 7 o'clock at night.
And what temperature would you aim to have your fridge at?
I kind of like to put it in the fridge when I ferment retarded fermentation. Retardé means to make late by French. So anyone who's listening to that and thinks, what is retarded? To make late, retardé. And so I tend to, on a very geeky level, look for the warmest part of the fridge. And if I can have it at 6 or 7 degrees, and that might be, you know, your vegetable compartment, or it might be, get a
wine
fridge.
Cooler.
Yeah, wine coolers are great, yeah.
And how does this hold its structure if you do it as a kind of a free loaf, as not in a tin?
Absolutely, pancakes, which is wonderful for something like this, which is a living, working example of a personalised loaf, and bread. We'll do that in a minute. That's our beetroot one. All that heritage grain that we evolved eating didn't have the strength, so that if it were a human is a ballerina who does the splits from cold, and it will not hold itself up as a ball. And interestingly, the gluten structure in my these botanicals is very different from the modern gluten structure of the modern loaf. Now, I don't not use roller milled white flour or modern flours, because when I'm holding the structure of a ball up, yes, of course it needs it, but you see, that is not a very digestible loaf. Mm-hmm. It's sexy, yeah. I mean, it's like, hell yeah, ding dong, look at my big holes, wee wah woo wah. We all get clapped on Instagram, thank you very much, look at my holes. Mm-mm. But actually, this is nourishing. And actually, with the balls, I obviously do a combination where everybody wants them. I mean, they are the sort of, you know, I think we just had music on, you know, the sex pot. Is it Tom Jones? Da, 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 da. That's that loaf, isn't it? Da, 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 da. Look what I took out of the oven. Look at me. But your guts. If you've got any digestive issue, any autoimmune, any menopause, any neurodiversity, you have got any cancer in the family, you've got any digestive issues, really this is actually what you should be singing sex pot to. You take this one out of the oven. I know it's not as visually sexy, but Joe, what do you think to this? Yeah, I mean, you, yeah. Joe, you know, you're a
nutritionist.
Yep, and yes, one of my students for many years.
Yeah,
carry on.
I think, you know, it is about, you know, having a bread that is actually digestible and nourishing at the same time. So, you know, if you have got that, you know, as you were talking about the, what we call the leaky gut or that intestinal permeability, then, you know, it is about making sure that the bread is properly digestible. So you're not going to be like creating that immune response and overreaction and inflammation at the gut wall, but also outside of the gut wall and the other side of the gut wall as well, which can then, you know, predispose to issues around the immune system, autoimmunity potentially, you know. So I think that, you know, it is, and then it's also about, you know, as you say, the fibre that supports the mucosal health, integrity, and feeding that.
So do you see this being useful in your, with your clients? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I can encourage clients to make their bread, then, you know, that's you know, job, not almost job done, but, you know, it is certainly something that, you know, is going to be much more beneficial to their overall diet. And also, if a client has been excluding bread, because a lot of clients will exclude a lot of foods, and so suddenly you're putting this on the table, which has suddenly got loads of ingredients that they would never even try, plus it's in a bread form, then it's suddenly opening up their diet. And that can also be really helpful with anxiety and stress around food as well, because suddenly you're opening the diet up and you're introducing, you know, other foods to the table, literally.
Should we put these in the oven? Okay, well, I've done all the hard work, so you go and put them in the oven. Do you want to take one each?
I'm going to do as well. Just give me 1 second. With these, because they're so fermented, I'm a little bit worried they're going to get burnt bottoms.
Oh, yes.
We don't like burnt bottoms. So I'm going to put the grill in. And the grill, which has around, allows me, in my oven, to push that fermentation, push the breakdown, but also means I don't get a burnt bottom because no one wants their bread. So just watch your arms, that's it.
Should I put smaller on the lower?
Yeah, no, lower is hot, but the top one is actually cooler.
Do you want some on the lower?
I don't mind. I'm just going to spray it with some water. Occasionally, if the students are paying attention, I'll spray them. That just keeps it nice and moist in there. Keeps the crust from drying out immediately.
If you haven't got an oven like that, you could put the water in.
Don't do that in your oven at home. You'll blow your oven up. But just a tray of water is fine. So they're cooking on a lower temperature. So they're actually cooking on about 200 and baking on that. Nice and long and slow. A bit like a cake, really.
For an hour.
Say again?
For an hour.
Do you know what? With these, for me, I actually do something a little bit... Again, this is this thing where we don't follow recipes. I cook them until they're about done. Because this is a slightly different size to usual, I will just check in on them probably after about 35 minutes. If you're listening to that, that's not my guts. That's the spray. I would never trust anyone whose guts make that noise. Sorry, that's my spray for the oven. So there you are. So what do you think to that as a whole? I mean, you guys have watched me do this for years. You're here first time. Any thoughts on this? Anything you want to add for anyone who's listening for the first time? Jenny?
I'm inspired to make more and send them to people just because I can see more and more people for whom this is going to make such a difference to their life and their guts. And almost every time I come and listen to you, I walk away with more information even if it's a little bit, it just adds to the fact that this bread is not like any bread we've ever known before.
That's evolutionary, so that's really where Mike, I was really fascinated when you called me. I don't know if you want to have a come around this side, but you have lived an evolutionary kind of life. You've watched this now. What are your thoughts? I mean, this is a...
Yeah, it all ties into looking at the vast time span that we've been evolving with, and looking at, you know, the industrial era, which is essentially two generations, and we've become 100% indoctrinated that a pappy crap white loaf is bread. Mm. And it's so far removed from previous several hundred thousand years of what we've been eating. It's unrecognisable, but we're so short-termist that we find it hard to look back and appreciate where we are in our evolutionary terms. So that a crappy white loaf is our idea of what we should be eating. It's incredible how 7 billion people almost are now thinking that's bread, whereas for the previous 200,000 years we've been eating this diversity of grains and seeds and natural stuff, and we haven't fucked about with it anywhere near the extent to which we're doing it now, which is nuts. But it's that happens across so many different foodstuffs now.
So when you were doing your work, what I found intriguing was that you saw people eating what was available to them to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a natural environment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in your environment, what was available to them was very different to this, what was available to them. So again, we have a situation where, on reflection, when we evolved, we had all this diversity around us in our environment. We saw the season was changing. This was literally, walk outside, this was available to most of the world. If I start looking at what we've done in terms of reducing diversity on in our environment and on the planet, just the animals and the plant species alone, and the wheat has been reduced in diversity over and over and over again. I would encourage anyone to read Dan Saladino's books from BBC Radio 4, Eating to Extinction, because he again has actually recognise that we are systematically reducing diversity in our environment. What I'm saying is, what you just said is, people will eat what is in their environment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So why is that any different to someone going into a supermarket and looking at what's available to them? They're just eating what's in their environment.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, but then there's nothing. It's plastic. Well, they're just doing what we do. They're eating what's in their environment, and we've created this monstrous environment devoid of anything we need in our shopping and lifestyle habits. We do not have access to what we evolved with through buying our bread in the way that we do it. We are being denied.
But and that time span that we've done that, you look at, we were talking about this, weren't we, Mike, about the whole, you were talking to me actually, and educating me. But, if you think about it percentage-wise, the number of years that has happened where we have stopped eating nutritious, nourishing bread, to then starting to shop in our supermarket and only eating what's available. If you look at that on the evolutionary chart and how we've progressed, is that much?
And the thing that I find extraordinary, I mean, you've been talking about benefits, health benefits, is this magical word taste. This crappy white bread has no taste. Mm-hmm. It's just a vehicle to put your crappy ingredients, whatever you're putting on it. But the thing about your bread is that it's a meal in itself. You don't have to put it in. It has real flavour and taste and texture, which is completely missing.
I think that's sort of thing. Thank you.
Well, it just excites your saliva, your digestive enzymes, your juices to just
make the better use of it.
And then again, coming back to that evolutionary like period, the increase in certain disease over that very small period of time has also escalated enormously.
Yeah, and you can laser focus on the specific nutrients and the genetics, but what it all boils down to is how far removed is it from what we would have eaten for 200,000 years? How far removed, how many steps, and what is that process from its natural state to reaching your guts? You know, if you eat a crappy Sunblessed, other crappy loads are available.
The crappy loads. And basically all of them are our level of crap. Yeah, I mean, this is where we're at. Even the healthiest loaf in the supermarket is on the trajectory of crap.
Yeah. Sorry. 15 to 20 ingredients.
Yeah. How long we've been eating 200,000 years?
We have evidence going back.
Homo sapiens, pretty much, yeah. It changes all the time. Every time they find a new skull somewhere, that it totally changes the whole thing. But you can roughly.
So the bulk of that period.
We haven't changed hardly at all in a couple hundred thousand years. Yeah, give or take 50,000 to 100,000 years. So yeah, and nothing's really changed in that time. So like if you're eating that and it's full of 30 natural ingredients, as opposed to a crappy white loaf that's got 15 to 20 emulsifiers, antioxidants, all this kind of stuff. The signals that is screwing up in your brain and your gut is incredible. So it's just going to confuse the hell out of your body, and it's not going to be able to process it at all.
So you come back to the fact that you've got your genetics, but it's what you wash over your genetics.
This is literally what the next podcast is on, which is actually, well, we've got this loaf to talk, this bread to talk about. That's our next, in fact, that's a good time to take a break on this podcast and just say, right, okay, I think you've really hit the nail on the head, guys, and I'm sometimes when I'm doing this I think, am I the only mad person who can see this? But actually, the more we talk and the more we communicate, the more I see that it's well, and also how obvious it all is when you look at it from an evolutionary point of view. It becomes, I mean, it's, you know, there's an accusation, if you like, of all this is genius, and I actually do sort of sometimes I recoil from this praise, because I just think it's common sense.
Yes, it's fogged up so much by the modern world and civilization and all the things we've got going on. It took me up, you know, I've been a chef for 35 years or whatever, and it took me, you know, several years of slow realization to actually understand how crap the food is that we're eating, and it made me quite angry looking back, thinking, well, how the hell didn't I see that before? But I think it's not because I'm stupid, although there are probably good grounds for that, but It's because everything's so cloudy and foggy, and it's really difficult to see through that and cut through it. And then as soon as you start looking at it in evolutionary terms of 100,000 years as opposed to, you know, the last couple of months, it all just slots into place.
Let alone the politics and economics of getting food from very far away and what that takes to deliver food across those distances with that time lag, what you have to do to the food to allow it to do that.
It's where you have to understand that when you look at bread in an evolutionary terms, you're challenging the whole system, Lucy. Mm-hmm. the whole system. Then suddenly,
who needs strawberries at Christmas? You know, I mean, it's, who needs strawberries at
And the supermarkets and the big companies will tell you it's what the consumer wants, but respond to the goods. Is it bollocks? It's not at all. It's money. It's just totally down to money.
It's always about money.
Just plowing more money into the system to create more supposed desire for it, and we don't need that at all.
So that's why the proven bread is kindness and pay it forward, and that's why I run this and I use my profits. Whenever I get my hands on any, which is quite rare, I drive it into sharing the knowledge, to push it. And that currency is my currency. It's not the money. I've never cared about the money. It's the currency is actually in the kindness, and that is disruption. Mm-hmm. And that people don't like that because you can't buy that.
Can't monetize that.
No. Mm-hmm.